ABC Radio Australia.
Could an alien object be hiding underwater off the coast of Manus in Papua New Guinea? That's the theory of Harvard physicist Avi Loeb, who's leading an expedition to the island to try and uncover a meteor that landed there in 2014. It was the first very rare interstellar meteorite ever documented to hit Earth. And that has scientists like Avi thinking there's a chance it could be artificially made. Carl Evans spoke to the physicist, who told him why he thinks the meteor might actually be a relic of an alien civilization.
Well, it's actually the first object that was identified by humans from outside the solar system. It was discovered on January 8, 2014, by the U.S. government, which monitors the atmosphere for ballistic missiles, any national security risks, and every now and then they see an object colliding with Earth. Usually these are rocks from the solar system, and they just document them. So there is a meteor catalog, and together with my student Tamir Siraj, we looked back at all the meteors that were recorded over the past decade, and it turns out that one of them from 2014 was moving too fast to be bound to the sun. We were able to extrapolate back in time its speed, and we found that it came from outside the solar system, and it was moving actually faster than 95% of all the stars in the vicinity of the sun. So we wrote a paper about it, and the U.S. government confirmed this identification and at the 99.999% confidence, and moreover released data about the fireball that was created when the meteor exploded 10 kilometers above sea level. And we were able to analyze it and infer that it had material strength that is higher by at least a factor of 10 than all other meteors ever recorded in the same catalog, 272 of them. And so why would the first interstellar object that came from outside the solar system be tougher than all the space rock we had seen? And there are two possibilities. One is that it originated from some unusual source, very different from the solar system, and it's natural in origin, or that it's actually artificially made. It was produced by another civilization out there and collided with Earth by chance. The way that, for example, Voyager, the spacecraft that we launched into interstellar space, could in principle collide with an exoplanet.
Wow. So are you basically saying that if it in fact is an alien artifact, that it might be made from some sort of material that is what, unknown to our civilization, to our planet?
It could be, for example, stainless steel, a very tough material, much tougher than iron. So it could be artificial in origin, but something that in principle either we produce or that we can produce in principle. But what we are trying to do is collect the fragments left over from the explosion of this meteor, and we identify the location, and we're planning an expedition that will cost $1.5 million. We are developing the machinery, and we know where to go, and it will take a couple of weeks, and we just hope to find some small fragment the size of a millimeter or so, so the like the head of a pin, and we just need a small number of them, maybe 10 or up to 100, in order to figure out the composition. And that would be very exciting, because it's the first time humans put their hand on an object that came from outside the solar system.
Yeah, it sounds incredible. We'll get to the search in just a second. Just on this object, so when it actually entered the Earth's atmosphere, how big was this object? Did it make quite a splash when it landed off the coast of PNG, or was it relatively small? What kind of scale are we talking about?
It was about half a meter in size, so just like a giant watermelon. Not very big, and it released a few percent of the Hiroshima atomic bomb energy. Every year, there is an object roughly the size of a person, 2 meters in diameter, that collides with Earth, and usually it's a rock from the solar system, and that releases as much as the Hiroshima bomb. So we have a collision like that every year, and it happens high in the atmosphere, about 30 kilometers up, and it doesn't cause any damage, and it's not noticed very often because it's over the ocean. This one was different in the sense that the object moved much faster than solar system objects, and also it had material strength that allowed it to go relatively low in the atmosphere.
Yeah, unbelievable. So the size of a watermelon, like you mentioned, it's landed essentially in the middle of the ocean. I imagine it's probably going to be like finding a needle in a haystack. How are you going to search for this?
Yeah, you're right. The government data provided a very large margin regarding the location, and it was 10 kilometer by 10 kilometer, and it would have been hopeless to find any relic from it. But we were able to localize it much better than that using seismometer data on Manus Island. And from that, we were able to pinpoint the distance for where it happened to within a kilometer. And the question is, you know, if we find something as big as that, it's sufficient to have one to figure out what it was made of. And I already promised the curator of the Museum of Modern Art in New York City that if we ever find anything, we can put it on display there, because it would represent modernity for us to find something that an advanced civilization produced. They were probably more advanced than we are.
And just on the project itself, $1.5 million, it's definitely no small amount of money. Is this funded by Harvard?
No. It's funded by an individual that provided funds to my research at Harvard. And basically, I wrote a book called Extraterrestrial a couple of years ago, and it received a lot of attention, the first book. And some wealthy individuals came to the porch of my home and offered me research funds. I didn't do any fundraising. And in this particular case, someone came forward and said, here is the money needed for the expedition.
You mentioned before that it'll be going to the Museum of Modern History. Will you try and engage with Papua New Guinea at all to see if they want to get in on the action or anything?
Yes. We have some partners at Papua New Guinea, and just like any scientific material, it will be available for anyone to use. It will not be used for any commercial purpose, and we will make it available. And all the findings will be shared by all scientists worldwide, and of course, with anyone in Papua New Guinea who is interested in studying it, and we have some partners there.
And Avi, just lastly before we go, just out of curiosity more than anything, it feels like culturally, you know, the talk of aliens and UFOs, it's really come back to the forefront of society in a big way. You've written a number of books on the subject. You're obviously a very qualified person. What's your personal opinion? Are we approaching a time, do you think, where that first contact could be made?
Yeah, I think what's different now is that for the past 70 years, we've been searching for radio signals. And that's just like waiting for a phone call at home. You need the counterpart to be active, to call you. And there may not be anyone calling you when you're listening, waiting for that. Whereas the new approach that I'm pioneering with the Galileo project that I'm leading and also this expedition is to look for any packages that might be in our mailbox. And the sender may not be alive. You don't need the sender to be active when you're looking for it. So it's a completely different search method, looking for objects, physical objects that are near Earth.